Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today I am delighted to welcome fellow Southerner Donna Gunter to the show. I'm in Louisiana. She's in Texas. We're experiencing the same really crummy weather. So Donna, hi, Donna. Donna is the author of Get More Clients Online, How to Get 95% of Your Clients from Internet Marketing, and she is the founder of the Online Marketing Strategy Training Community, Online Business U, Online Biz U, rather, which, by the way, I'm a member of. Donna is an Internet Marketing Automation Coach who helps independent service professionals such as virtual assistants and other online professionals, create prosperous online businesses that make more profit in less time. Very important stuff to know. She accomplishes this by teaching them how to automate their businesses, leverage their expertise online, and implement the most effective internet marketing strategies to increase their visibility in their marketplace to, guess what, get you found online. So today we're chatting about just how you can go about getting found online and the 6 best strategies to massively increase your online visibility. So, Donna, good morning. Thank you so much for being here, and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, Denise.
Well, I've been following you around for a while. We were chatting a little bit before the show started, and, you know, I'm also a member of Online Biz U, which is a tremendous resource for anybody who needs to know what's going on online. So I, you know, really recommend that people take a look at that. So today, tell me what, well, first of all, tell me about yourself, how you came to be the expert that you are, and what we're going to be chatting about today.
Well, many, many years ago, and it's really only been 10 years ago in regular time, but in internet time, that's it seems like 100 years ago, I actually started a business as a virtual assistant in 1999, had moved back to Texas from Massachusetts after several life upheavals, including a divorce, and moved into my mom's house where I'd lived as a teenager and opened up my business in her garage. So I was living in a very small rural East Texas town, no contacts really except family who all still to this day scratch their head at exactly what it is I do for a living, especially the fact that I'm
plain.
Yeah, especially trying to do it on the computer.
A lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And so starting my business as a virtual assistant, discovered really quickly that I had a knack for marketing, even though I never have gone through any business courses. However, my experience in higher education administration that we called programming in the business world would be referred to as marketing, since I had developed the skill of convincing a residence hall full of students to come to an educational program instead of going to an off-campus keg party. And that made me sharpen my marketing skills, also, although we didn't call it that in higher ed. So having made that translation from education to business and figuring out that, oh, wow, I really do know how to do this, and this is what it's called in this industry, I slowly changed my virtual assistant practice so that I focused fairly exclusively on helping clients market their business. And then as I got more familiar with internet marketing, changed to that, and then became an online business manager. And I still actually have a few clients, consulting clients, that I do online business management work for. But the bulk of my work is in coaching and in running the membership site. So while I have not gone to school to learn how to do internet marketing, I've been out there doing it for 10 years, both for myself and for my clients. So I guess my degree, instead of having a master's degree like I do in higher ed administration, my degree has come from the School of Hard Knocks in terms of reading lots of information, figuring out what works well for service businesses, what doesn't seem to work well, and really tearing that down into a system that when implemented, you can use again and again and again. You know, it's not rocket science. People think that there's some secret to this, And the secret is trying to ferret through all the information that exists out there, and it's massive, massive quantities, and people who are looking for this information tend to buy and buy and buy and buy more and more stuff until things just start circling in their brain, and they have no idea who to believe, where to go, what to do, how to get started, and being in complete overwhelm, they simply do nothing. I mean, I can understand that. I did that for several years until I figured out, you know, started seeing the same things again and again. It's like, ah, there is a method to this madness.
Mm-hmm. So you came from the school of practicality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good place to be from. So I know you started out as a VA. I started out as a web developer and then kind of morphed into virtual assistants because it was an added value service for my clients.
Right.
And I had two companies, you know, very separate companies, your office on the web, which is a web development company, and then your virtual assistant. And now the lines are so blurred that I don't even try to explain that I have two companies anymore. So it really does work well. So my question for you today is, what is the million-dollar question that you have to be able to answer before you start any marketing?
Denise, I call this the million-dollar question because it is absolutely vital that this question be answered before you start anything else. I work with lots of clients, coach lots of clients, and I see them falling down on this particular area so many times, and that the answer to this question is defining who your target market is. It's, you know, when you have an online presence, it's really no different than having a retail store, and you really have to know who you're serving in your retail store because it factors into what newspapers you decide to advertise in, what size ads you take out on the telephone directory, how you decorate your store, what kinds of customer service things do you enact. And even though you don't have a brick-and-mortar location, or many people don't, when they create an online business, there is no real-life component to that, you really do have to create that environment so that when your target market reaches your site, they feel at home, they feel, oh, I've got to get that, they feel, oh, she knows exactly what it is that I'm talking about. And so many people don't do this. They think, oh, well, I've got such a great product or great service that this applies to everybody.
Everybody, right.
Well, man, have you ever tried to market to everybody? It's really, 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 really
unless
tough.
Unless you're a presidential candidate, that is not going to work.
Well, yeah, and you've got the budget to roam around the country in your, you know, decaled bus kind of thing, and you've got staff to do that. But most business owners I deal with don't have that influx of capital. None of them have won the lottery lately. And the big aha that people get once they finally figure out who that target market is that it's a great sense of relief. I remember in particular talking with one client who, I guess, rebelled and or held me off in terms of making her define her target market because, indeed, she did think this was appropriate for everybody. And finally, after she had been beaten down a little bit in terms of not being successful in what she was doing, she finally decided to, that I did know a little bit about what I was talking about, decided to take my words to heart, and I had her create what Lori Morgan Ferrero calls a target or target market profile. And it's a 5-to-6-sentence paragraph of her target market. I mean, she gives it a name, she gives it an age, a gender, you know, what the person does for a living, a little bit about family life. And so this is a verbal representation of a vision of a target market. And now she creates everything as though she's talking to this description. I don't know what she calls it. I don't recall the name that she gave it. You know, say Sandy, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so her email newsletter is written as though she's talking to Sandy. Any of her email promos are written as though she's talking to Sandy. She's created her website as though she's talking to Sandy. And by, you know, choosing to have this conversation with her target market, she has realized that her marketing has suddenly become much easier, whereas before she would think, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't write this because I'm going to tip this person off or, you know, this particular part of my market off or
right.
I'm really going to offend them. Now she knows exactly who she's writing for, and if she offends somebody, she's like, well, hooray, go find somebody that's a better fit for you because obviously that's not me. This is who I am, this is what I stand for, and this is what I'm all about.
So that narrowing of the market is really something that people should absolutely just overcome their objection to, and I know I'm with you. I've heard this from my clients, but everybody needs this. No, honey, they don't. they trust me on this. They don't. They may need it, but they're not going to pay attention. So you really need to market to who does want your product.
Absolutely.
So what are the steps that they would take to determine? Because it's an emotional thing. I know it's an emotional thing. I've been there with my clients. So what do you tell people how to get over that? You know, they want to be generous, they want to give, they want to bring something to the world. How do they get over that?
Well, the biggest objection that clients seem to have is that they feel like they're closing the door on some other options and some other opportunities. And what I tell them is that, yes, perhaps you're interested in marketing to, say, these four different groups. You need to pick one and focus on it, and saying no to the other three doesn't mean no forever. It just means no for right now. Get your foot in the door of this one particular target market. Get known in this other target market. Then you can bring the others on slowly. And that seems to make them feel better. And what generally happens is that they either accomplish so much and get so much success in this one particular target market that the other three just kind of sit by the wayside, never to be looked at again. Or they start getting natural inquiries from these other target markets who, you know, come to a website or see some marketing materials and say, hey, Donna, I know you work with such and such and so-and-so, and I am, and it's, you know, maybe a 15, 20, 30-degree shift over who you're working with normally, and will you work with me, even though I don't fit necessarily your criteria?
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to get a foothold someplace. You've got to establish yourself as an expert someplace before anybody believes that you have got any credibility, anybody believes that you can do what it is you say you can do.
Right. In other words, don't scattershot.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to use my shotgun metaphor, because we're in Texas, we have lots of guns, even though I'm very anti-gun. People seem to be able to relate to that.
And see, we have guns here, too.
Right.
Everybody, you can't hardly drive down the road and not see a rifle in a rack on a pickup truck. I mean, that's just the way
exactly.
It is. So let's say that we've got, you know, you've got your client or you have your market, if you will, just kind of saying, okay, I'm going to focus on the one thing that I know I'm an expert at, the one thing that I have absolutely no compunction in offering, that I can speak confidently about, I can speak confidently to, that I can genuinely help other people with, that I can branch out later. So once you've got that kind of mindset in your head, what are the two best indicators of success once you've identified your, let's call it a single target market? What are the best two indicators that you're doing the right thing?
The first one is, can they be easily found in a group someplace, whether that's online or offline? So many times clients come to me and say, oh, well, you know, I've narrowed my target market. I'm going to work with stressed out moms. And I'll say, yeah, but you know, there is no association for stressed out mothers. There is probably no discussion forum for stressed out mothers. I mean, there's no one place that people are gathering as a group. It's really, you know, easier if you target people, say, by industry. You know, there are lots of, let's look at accountants. You know, there are lots of accountant societies, accountant organizations, both on the state level, the national level, the regional level. There are publications that go out to these folks. There are listservs that serve these folks. There are probably special social networks that serve these folks. So they're really easy to reach out and touch as a group. But when you still have a broader target market, if you can't reach out and touch them in some way, again, they're going to be really tough to market to. So I have to work with people to narrow that even further. It's like, okay, stressed out moms, you know, in a particular industry, in a particular field, makes it much, much easier to find them as a group. So you want to be able to find your target market and easily identify them in some group, be that online or offline. And second, you've got to find out if there are enough of them to be viable. So if your target market were, people who have, say, a particular disease, and there may be only 100 of those people who are known to have this disease in the United States, well, quite frankly, that's just not really enough of a target market to launch a product or service toward, because that group is probably not going to grow very rapidly. So a great indicator of whether or not there are enough of them to be viable is there competition out there already? And don't be scared by that, but is there competition out there already who are providing some service or some product to serve this market? And many times people will come back to me and say, wow, you know, I can't find any competition. You know, that must mean that I'm riding the wave here to be the first one to serve this market. And I say, well, you know, perhaps you're like among the maybe 5% where this is actually the case. However, the 95% chance is that other people have looked at this market, it's not viable, and they have left it. So let's do some really deep research here, because it concerns me that there's no competition out there.
Well, you said something a minute ago that I hear all the time, and it's the objection to competition. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, I can't go up against Donna Gunter, or I can't go up against Denise Griffiths. They're big names in their industries. Or I can't go up against Joel Kahn, you know, the godfather of AdSense. Or,
right.
I mean, pick a name. I can't write a Chicken Soup for the Soul book because Jack Canfield owns that. Why can't you? And this is something that I come across constantly trying to explain to people that they need to overcome those objections and their self-inflicted mm-hmm. objections. So what do you tell people about competition? I think competition is healthy.
I think competition is very healthy, and what people need to remind themselves is that no one can provide information to them, to others, just like they would. So they've got a unique perspective, a unique take on the world, and a unique take on how they present this information. Go back to the Chicken Soup for the Soul kind of thing. You know, they're not Jack Canfield. They don't have Jack Canfield's experiences. They've got their own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The trick
your personality may not mesh with everybody.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's a big thing too.
And to tweak your offering, you know, to make it a little different, to find out what is unique about that and promote that uniqueness and that difference. You know, there's a lot of major brand name companies, of course, I've forgotten the one that I was going to mention that's just slipped from my head, but they've had commercials on. What's that?
Coca-Cola. That's the only one I can think of.
I don't think I've ever seen Coke promote themselves in this way, but there have been big brand name companies on television commercials who've been happy with, you know, we're number two. And, you know, it's great for them to be number two. They don't have any issue with being number two because, hey, that's number two out of this huge field of competitors
mm-hmm.
across, say, the United States of America. Maybe that's the world. I don't quite remember the company who made the advertisement. But, you know, it's the same thing as the Super Bowl. You know, even if you lost the Super Bowl, you're still number two in terms of all the pro football teams, or if you're college
right.
football, it still means you're pretty darn good and you have some name recognition and some brand recognition. And so just tweaking that difference and selling that as opposed to trying to copy, go up against exactly what your competitors are doing is the thing that will make you unique and distinctive.
Mm-hmm. Did we cover both indicators or just one? I kind of lost track there.
The other one was, is there enough of them to be viable? So, you know, I was going back to the, you know, if you were working on a product to serve people with a disease and there was only 100 people in the U.S., with that disease, that would not be a viable market. I mean, yes, you can sell a handful, but after that, then what do you do? You've got this product
right.
and no customers for it.
My mind is buzzing, so I'm thinking ahead of you while I'm thinking about these questions I have for you. So forgive me if I get a little lost because my brain is on fire right now. So tell me this. What is the secret that just no one's going to tell you to quadrupling your marketing reach? Because let me back up a little bit. I will tell everybody who listens to me that online entrepreneurs are the most generous people in the world, and I really do believe that. But you are going to come across people who are just going to hug those secrets and those, you know, those, I don't know, you know, tasks and qualities and just different things that they can offer. They're going to hug them to their chest. They don't want to share. So how do you know that you're really going to be able to quadruple your marketing reach by listening to somebody? What is the secret?
Well, the first thing that comes to people's mind is because, and many times they don't know that much about internet marketing, so they're applying to internet marketing what they know to be true in direct mail. The first thing they say is, oh, I can buy an email list. Oh, look, you know, I've got some email here that somebody is offering me 10,000 email addresses for $199. Should I buy that? I'm like, no, please, don't buy this. Run very fast in the other direction. And I have had clients who've ignored my advice and bought lists, and they have been slammed as spammers. You know, somebody got really ticked off at them, went so far as to notify their web host, domain registrar, their ISP. They've lost everything or been shut down at least for a period of months and not been able to transact any business at all. So if you ever have an opportunity to buy any type of email-related list, do not ever do that. Run quickly in the other direction because buying an email list is not even remotely the same as buying a direct mailing list or where you're actually mailing physical mail to somebody's physical mailing address.
Mm-hmm.
So
even that doesn't work with me. That's all trash as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And people are not, you know, if it's not something that people have signed up for, people are going to just either going to get caught in their spam folders or they're going to see the subject and see who's sending it and say, I don't know this person, and just trash it anyhow. So it's really a lost effort on your part. the way to quadruple your marketing reach is something that took me several years to figure out. And again, it was one of those looking at what other people were doing, trying to model those systems, and finally dawning upon the idea of, oh, this is what people are doing to peer everywhere. And that is creating a system for repurposing your content. So, for example, what I tell my clients to do is start with one article per week. And it's a, typically, you know, if you're close to 1,000 words, you have a little bit more options for repurposing it. But even a 600 to 800 word article can work. Take that article and you do things like it runs in your email newsletter for that particular week. You post it on your blog for that week, and then your blog is connected to your social networking accounts like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. You can chop that article up and make a Twitter hashtag campaign where you're sending out tips on a periodic basis that you preload into something like, what's it called now, Social Oomph, which used to be TweetLater.
Yeah, you see TweetLater. Mm-hmm.
Or what I'm using currently, Hootsuite. You know, so that goes out over a period of time. Again, you know, once it's kind of a fix-it-and-forget-it type of solution. You can take that article and create a podcast from that and create a whole podcast series that people can subscribe to on iTunes. You can take that article if you want to do a really quick video from PowerPoint and upload it to something like Animoto and put a music behind it or even do a voiceover. And that can go out to all the video submission sites, Vidler, YouTube. Gosh, I don't know. There's tons of those. I mean, you can use a submission service like TubeMogul to get your video out to all of those sites. You can write a press release based on that article. It could be a tips press release that can go out to all the online services, or you can pay somebody like PR Web where it's really going to get some prominence and not just sit on the free press release sites. You can create a teleclass from this and offer it to your list or offer it for a fee and promote that on social networking sites. You can actually, once you've created several articles, you can bundle them together in a special report that you give away or you sell, or you can offer that as your client attraction device to get people to sign up for your list. So I'm a fairly lazy marketer in terms of I only like to create once and then, you know, profit. You know, so I take the content that I create and I repurpose the heck out of it and try to get as much mileage as I can from this content, and new opportunities are opening up every day. For me to go back and take older content and repurpose that to some newer technologies that are coming up. So, for example, all the stuff that's going on now with Twitter hashtag campaigns that I'm just now getting into video were things that I didn't even consider maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm doing the same thing. And video is something I was aware of, but I just didn't have time. And now we're really starting to kind of ramp up and do that.
And what's cool about this strategy is that it really does make you appear to be everywhere. I was on another teleclass with a woman who works with nurse practitioners who are in business for themselves, and I started talking about some of these secrets. And as I was kind of teasing her, it's like, oh, you know, I'll let you see behind the curtain, and you've actually seen the wizard, like in The Wizard of Oz. And she laughed, and she says, oh, well, you know, I was wondering how you did this. A lot of this is automated. She said, so now I've seen the real truth, and I'm not quite as impressed. She says, but I am, but I really thought you were out there doing this all the time, and I was wondering how you ever slept. And so
I had the same question.
And so that's the way.
It is, and automation is absolutely the way. I have a client who's a very well-known sports psychologist. He's, you know, he deals with the Olympics, and he's just very well-known. And he called me one day, and he said very quietly and very concerned, he said, Denise, do you ever sleep? Yes, I do. Kind of. He was, you know, he sees me everywhere. He said, I can't throw a rock without seeing you. I said, I know, I'm everywhere. But a lot of it, as you say, is automation. And, of course, the technology is something that you have to take the time to learn. And you have to know what the technology is, how to use it, and, you know, how to deploy it on your behalf. But once you understand that, the world is your oyster.
Yeah, and it's a really easy replicatable system. You know, so what you're doing once, you know, for one particular, say, article, and you can do this time and time again, or have your staff, have your team, assuming you may have a virtual assistant or two on your team.
I have 14.
Right, deploy a lot of these tasks for you so that it becomes kind of an automation. You know, once the article comes out, then you've got this whole series of steps that a member of your team goes through. in order to repurpose that content all over the internet. And what's even cooler is that, you know, if somebody searches for you by name or even searches on a keyword by which you want to be found, and then, you know, this page comes up in Google and they start clicking on the items, and you know, they see that you, between the videos you have, maybe podcasts, blog posts, articles, et cetera, almost everything they click on is related to you, they begin to think, wow, she must be the expert in this area. Mm-hmm. I had a very funny telephone call probably about 2 years ago now, or 3 years ago, where somebody was, I'd seen an article I'd written about a virtual grand opening and wanted to talk to me a little bit more about that. So she called up and I think she said she'd read an article, but for some reason she hadn't connected it to me. So I don't know, I don't recall now exactly how we ended up talking, but we started talking about the virtual grand opening, and so she Googled that, and she was looking, she's like, oh my God, I didn't realize all these articles are yours. She's like, I am talking to the expert about virtual grand openings. And, you know, I didn't do anything except doing what I normally do to appear in all these different places. So she had the perception that, it was an ingrained perception because she saw this article in so many different ways and so many different places that, yes, I indeed was that expert. So without my having to convince her of anything, she came to that conclusion all on her own.
Yeah, and that's exactly what marketing is. We have a couple of questions in the chat room pertaining to what we're talking about.
Okay,
well,
sure.
One goes back a little bit further. You were talking about the commercial, and I am told that as Avis, we try harder.
That's probably it. Okay.
Okay. And the other question, this is actually a question, can you elaborate on Twitter hashtag campaigns? Can you give examples?
Sure. If you follow me, my Twitter username is @DonnaGunter. It's @DonnaGunter. Or look up hashtag. It's a pound sign, as some of those who are older might know on the telephone. hashtag OBU traffic tip. That's online bizu OBU traffic tip. And you will see my hashtag campaign that takes content out of articles, and they've been up preloaded to social oom for tweet later, and they're going out periodically a couple of times a week. And most of them, not all of them, will link back to something that I've written. So they're providing a useful tip and a link in 140 characters. So for whatever you're trying to promote, whatever you're trying to sell, you can do exactly the same thing. I see people do this frequently for promoting an event or affiliates promoting an event. There's no grand central poobah of controlling hashtag names. So you simply just go to Twitter and Twitter search and, you know, type in hashtag whatever name you want to give it and see if anybody else is using that. If it's not, boom, that's yours. And then create a series of tweets that either you're distributing, your affiliates are distributing, or a network of people are distributing about whatever it is you're trying to promote. You know, mine, I don't have an event that I'm promoting with this. I'm just simply trying to get out useful information to my followers. And what's very cool that I've seen happen in the last 2 months since I've been doing that is that one of those tips will really strike somebody, and so then they will then retweet that or, you know, republish that to their list of, you know, 500,000, 3,000, 5,000 followers. And my link is going with that, and so therefore I'm getting name recognition among a whole group of people that did not know me previously.
Right. That is a really great tip, and I'm going to probably be tweeting about that myself. Go listen to Donna Gunter. This is brilliant. Okay, so we've gone, you know, we're telling people not to buy a list, and thank you for telling people that. It is a huge, huge no-no as far as I'm concerned. So going from there, what is the best way to establish yourself as an expert in your field? We've kind of covered it, but, you know, I'd like you to elaborate on that again, if you don't mind.
Sure. Figure out what it is that you do best and really crown yourself the expert. You know, nobody is going to believe you're the expert unless you tell them you are, but then you have to back that up with beginning to write about what you know and getting the word out, as we've talked about a little earlier, and repurposing by syndicating your articles. The big fear that people have, especially coaches, consultants, speaker types, people who are information brokers like I am, who are hired for their expertise, is, oh my gosh, you know, if I give it away for free, nobody's going to hire me.
Biggest question you ever hear? I mean, that's the biggest one. That's the first one.
About giving, why people would hire me if I give it away?
People just say, well, I can't give it away for free. I work too hard on this. I can't give it away for free. You need to give something.
Right. You've got to give something in order so that people believe that you know what you're talking about.
Right.
And my typical response is it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, I guess, maybe a smart-aleck comment, but it really is true in terms of if everything that you know about this particular subject can be summarized in a 600-word article, then you really don't know enough to be an expert.
Oh, I like that.
And, you know, I can't imagine
do you
that
give them an exercise? Do you say, write this down, and if this is all you've got, you need to go back to school?
Yeah, absolutely, because if you're truly an expert, a 600-word article does not even begin to penetrate the depth and breadth of knowledge that you can share with people how you can share with people and be hired for in terms of your expertise.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even scrape the surface. So
no.
Don't be afraid about telling what you know. I mean, there's sometimes I start an article and I tend toward trying to outline everything and tell everything. So I really have to hold myself back from that because I am, I guess coming from the education field where we shared a lot, I am a sharer. And one, I have to hold back because, you know, this 800-word article has suddenly become 1,200 or 2,000 words, and it's like, whoa, this needs to be like three articles or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't need to give that much detail. That's overwhelming people. If they want to know more, they really need to either subscribe to my site where there's more detail or just hire me, and I can walk them through the process. So
right.
there's an old adage in the speaking world, especially if you're selling a high-end program, is that you talk about the what and the why of something, but you don't disclose the how. And in order to get the how, people have to buy from you. Well, I don't necessarily buy into that at all when I'm writing articles. I really do feel it is necessary to disclose some content because if all you're doing in your article is, again, restating the problem, I think your reader says, yep, I know I've got a problem. That's not news to me. I want to know how the heck do I solve this, and you're not telling me any of that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, providing at least a couple of resources or a couple of tips in each article about how to go about solving the problem without spilling the whole thing
mm-hmm.
is enough to get people hooked to want to find out a little bit more. So don't be afraid of sharing your expertise because if you're not going to share it, there's absolutely no way you're going to be able to convince people that you are the expert in your field.
Right. And one of the things you said when you first started talking on this topic is that they don't know you're an expert until you tell them.
Right.
And a lot of us, and I'm terribly guilty of this, just don't want to get out there and go, well, yeah, I'm really good at what I do. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. We don't want to be that braggart or, you know, perceive ourselves as a braggart or braggadocio. And I did the same thing. I just kind of hid behind what I knew, but didn't really do anything about it. And you know who got me out of that? Travis Greenlee.
Uh-huh.
I was chatting with Travis one day. And I was telling him, you know, what I do as a web developer and as a virtual assistant. And he was very quiet for a moment. I thought, well, just lost Travis. You know, I don't know what's going on here. And he said, and I'll never forget this, he said, Denise, why didn't I know that you were a virtual assistants industry expert? And I said, that's a good question. And I thought about that for about 24 hours, and then I just got out there. And thank you, Travis, because I wouldn't have done it without him going,
right.
Why didn't I know? Because I didn't tell. I didn't tell. You know, I just kind of expected people to knock on my door and say, you are so brilliant. Can I hire you?
Right.
Like that.
That doesn't
really
work
stupid.
When you're self-employed.
No.
If you don't toot your own horn, it doesn't happen.
That's right. So I had to really get past that, you know, kind of self-effacing, I don't want to brag about myself, to say, I am an expert. I'm an absolute expert. And my life changed dramatically. Again, thank you, Travis. So all of you who are listening, listen to Donna. She's absolutely correct. You have to tell people. You must.
Well, I think the other thing that holds people back, or at least this was my own experience and what was holding me back, is I didn't realize that what I knew was new information for other people. Because
exactly.
It comes really easily to me and I pick up on it and, you know, study it and can just do it. I mean, it really doesn't require much effort on my part because it's a natural talent and a natural gift. I assumed
right.
everybody knew this, and it didn't.
See, I had the same thing. It just occurred to me that I didn't know anything that was just earth shattering.
Right,
apparently,
because you think everybody knows it.
Yeah, they don't. It's amazing, and I don't know what a lot of people know. I mean, you've taught me a couple of new things today. So we all have to really carefully listen to each other, and then get our own expertise out there.
Yeah,
really
I think. It wasn't until I was going to a couple of networking meetings, I would talk about some internet marketing stuff that, you know, I just you know, didn't give that much time to, because I thought, oh God, you know, this is old hat. We've been doing this for years, and people just swarmed me and said, oh, can you do da 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 da? And I was like, you don't know how to do this? I have no idea. I haven't started this yet. It's like, gosh, you know, we've been doing this for 5 years. You have no clue. No, I don't know what you're talking about. And it suddenly hit me. It's like, wow, this is not stuff that people know about. Hello, I need to be focusing in on this. So that was kind of my start of focusing on the internet marketing piece. It wasn't as I thought that everybody knew about this. And I, you know, that was my world. That's what I, you know, learned about and read about all the time. So I thought everybody was doing this. And, you know, I found out it was really odd in that perspective, in that not everybody did this. Only a few of us were doing this.
Oh, I know. And, you know, with me with a web development background, which as a woman is not rare, but it's mostly a man-dominated, male-dominated industry. And I just kind of assumed that most people knew HTML. I speak HTML,
right.
So I figured, I speak geek. I just assumed that everybody else does. Guess what? They don't. So it's been a very interesting, you know, I kind of had to deconstruct what I knew and understand that other people just don't know what I know, and I don't know what everybody else knows either.
Right.
So I love what I do, and I, you know, I love what you're doing, because we're teaching other people, we're learning every day. It's an amazing world, amazing. So it's a lot of fun. So my clients, this is one of the big talks that I have with new and potential clients as well. I'll look at their website if they have one, if we're not creating one for them, and I'll say, well, what about your list? My what? You're kidding me. So let's talk about a list, an e-zine or an email newsletter. I would love to hear what you have to say on this topic.
Well, with the advent of social networking and blogging, people think that lists are dead, and lists are not dead at all. You really do need, it is really a tangible asset in your business. You can't depend upon social networking while it's a nice accent and adds to your business. Any of that could disappear at any point in time, and those of us who are fairly active in social networking knows that, you know, there are days when nobody can access Facebook and nobody knows why, or Twitter goes down,
or boom,
Twitter dumps all your followers, or says, oh, we suspect you, we're suspending your account. And, you know, boom, if you've got, you know, say 15,000 followers on Twitter and you were depending upon that solely for your bread and butter, you are just completely out of luck unless you can get your account restored. If you're blogging and your blog gets hacked, for example, and, you know, WordPress blogs, depending on how well you keep it updated with the new versions of WordPress, can very easily get hacked or be infected by a virus, and you can probably, you probably end up being able to restore it, but, you know, you're down for a day, 2 days, a week, or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that seems to be the strategy, I should say, that seems to be the most reliable, and you actually have a group of people to whom you can market, is an email list.
Well, that's your warm market. They have actively signed up to see what you have to say.
Exactly. If you're using a double opt-in system, they have said, yes, please send me whatever it is you're going to send me. I agree to be marketed at by you. Now, some people, I belong to, God, I get probably 500 or 600 emails a day. Many of them are from really well-known internet marketers who really haven't established a relationship with me. All they're doing is hammering me sometimes 2 or 3 times a day, and those people I have to unsubscribe from because it's just too much email.
I do the same thing, and I bet we're unsubscribing from the same people.
Probably. And there's no, they haven't built a relationship with me. They just start hammering me immediately to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've just become introduced to them in many cases. Don't really know much about them and need to figure out, do I trust them before I decide to buy something from them?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that I'm treating being on those lists, your customers, your prospects will treat being on your list. And so, if you're reaching out and touching them in an informative way every single week, they do start to trust you, they get to know you, they get to like you, and it's part of this like, know, and trust process that needs to happen with every single one of your prospects before they will decide to buy something from you, whether that's a $19 product, you know, a $27 membership, or hire you for a $500 or higher, you know, say, coaching gig, or, you know, $2,000 consulting gig. The
so
easiest way.
Do you think once a week is best?
Oh, absolutely. I was on a call a couple of weeks ago from a guy who said he sent out an email newsletter daily, and I honestly do not know how he does that, but I found out that he was not being truthful about that, because I'm on his list, and I don't get a daily email from him.
Mm-hmm.
I got on his list just to see if he walked his talk, and unfortunately he does not do that.
I was actually on a list for a couple of years that it was a daily email. I finally just couldn't read them all. As brilliant as a lot of them were, and they were opinion
right.
pieces mostly, I just got worn out. That's just too much.
Yeah, it's too much for a lot of people, and I have clients who fight me on sending out one once a week via an email newsletter. They say, well, you know, my clients or think I'm emailing them too much. And I said, well, you know what? Those are not your ideal market, because if you can't reach out and touch them once a week with informative stuff, now if you're emailing them crap, I can see why they're saying that. But if you're giving
trying
them,
to make them buy something?
Yeah, if all you're doing is emailing them to buy, yeah, well, I would complain too. But if you're sending them useful information that they can apply to their lives, apply to their businesses, to solve whatever problems they might have, they're going to look forward to your email every single week. But you have to train them when that's going to come out. You know, so for example, I try to get my email newsletter out every Thursday morning. I have been missing the mark and getting it out later in the day Thursday. But generally my prospects know to expect an email from Donna Gunter every single Thursday, my Get Clients Online E-Zine. And so one of the most important rules to remember is if you're going to do an email newsletter, you have to send it out regularly and consistently, the same time, train your readers to know when to expect that. And, you know, if I don't send mine out, I start getting emails of, okay, where's your newsletter? Mm-hmm. I didn't get it this week.
Right.
And those are, you know, on some occasions where the previous week I will say, well, I'm going on vacation this week. I'm not going to try to do a newsletter. See you in 2 weeks. And they miss that somewhere along the way.
Right. Now, what do you think is a, you know, sometimes you just can't do an e-zine. So what do you think of a broadcast? Explain to our listeners what the difference is between a broadcast and an e-zine and why it's important to make that distinction.
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily important to make that distinction. An e-zine typically has a similar format from week to week. So you've got it's like a print newsletter, for example. You've got certain columns within that publication that appear from week to week. So in my e-zine, for example, and I tell other people to model this, you know, I have a personal article from me about what's going on in my life, personally or professionally. I've got a primary article. That's the one that gets syndicated and repurposed in several different things. It's somewhere usually between 800 and 1,000 words. I've got a tip of the week, which is a cool tool that I've run across in my adventures online. And then
yeah,
I've got a marketing
piece. That's
down
to the bottom of your e-zine, isn't it?
What's that?
It's down towards the bottom.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes, I get your newsletter.
And then I've got a marketing piece, you know, where I've got a product or service that I'm promoting. And I've added a couple of other things in that. But if you have those four sections of your email newsletter and in your article, I will say three sections, you don't have to have a tool of the week. So if you've got a personal note from you, a primary article, and a marketing piece, people become accustomed to seeing that. People want to see that because they want to see what new information you can impart upon them every single week to help them in their business or their lives, mm-hmm. and they don't mind receiving that. You know, if you're doing kind of a general broadcast, it just might be an email, perhaps an email solicitation. I get those fairly frequently. They're usually in plain text format. Probably 75% of the time, they're inviting me to go see a video or do something that will ultimately try to upsell me into something else. And maybe 25% of the time, they truly are sharing information. You know, it's an article somebody's written, pointing me in the direction of something that they've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So those are how I make a distinction between broadcast and a regular email newsletter.
All right. Now let me ask you this, your newsletter, and I should know this, but I don't. Do you have it archived on your website or somewhere where people can go back and read
them
if it gets deleted?
The service that I use, which is AWeber, archives that automatically. And so people can go and, you know, look at back issues. Well, for as far back as I've been using AWeber, which I think is 2007 now.
Oh, my gosh. I love them. I've been using them for years. So what is the quickest and most inexpensive way to create an online network in, say, 15 minutes a day?
Believe it or not, even though many people spend much more time than this and engage in this activity, it is social networking. Even though I know I spoke earlier that, you know, your Twitter account can disappear overnight, you can be shut out of Facebook, you know, any number of things can happen to social networking. social networking is a free way, although can be a little time-consuming, to get the word out about who you are, what you do, who you serve, and you know what you've got to offer to people. Once you figure out, well, I guess the key in social networking is to figure out where or what social networks that your target market hangs out. You know, MySpace once upon a time was the end-all and the be-all of everything, and now what I've seen is that people are leaving MySpace in droves and really going to Facebook. However, I do see that musicians still tend to be using Facebook. Creative types, artists of all sorts, crafters, still tend to be using Facebook. And, you know, there is still a fairly large, I guess, teen population or so that's still using, MySpace. Still using MySpace.
Right. I find that real marketers are, it's just my observation, but people who are really serious about their business are not too much on Facebook, MySpace,
right.
They're on Facebook. They're on LinkedIn to some degree. LinkedIn, of course, is a little stuffier, not quite as easy to maneuver in.
Right, it's not.
But, you know, you really need both. I call it the holy three, you know, Facebook,
yeah.
LinkedIn, Twitter. We call it the trinity down here.
Right. Yeah, and I'm talking about Emeril and his trinity for cooking kind of thing.
That's right. Emeril Lagasse, that's right. That's absolutely right. Listen, we talked earlier about Online Biz U, and I am a member, and I strongly recommend that everybody become a member. Do you have a trial membership that people can look at?
Yeah, we offer a $1, 21-day trial membership to Online Biz U, and you can pick that up at www.onlinebizu, and that's spelled O-N-L-I-N-E-B-I-Z-U as in the letter U, .com/YPS. .htm. And I don't know, Denise, if you'll have this on the website.
It's on the website. I'm typing it in the chat room as well.
Okay. And with this 21-day trial, you actually get full access to what full members have access to, the downloads, the past teleclasses, where we've had experts come in, the transcripts for those, all the articles, the checklist, the e-books, the forum. So you get the full gamut of what we offer at Online Biz U. It's really ideal if you have a service business and you're confused about how to get more clients, better presence online. You know, so as you can see, when you go to the Online Biz U homepage, there are departments covering a variety of internet marketing topics, from blogging to e-zines to e-commerce to social networking. I mean, there are probably 20 or 25 there at least, with articles and ebooks and checklists and downloads supporting those. We're soon getting into the video scene.
Mm-hmm.
So videos will be joining that lineup as well to help people understand and use in their business these different social networking strategies or different internet marketing strategies.
All right. Very nice. I have one more question, and then we have people who have their hands up. They're like,
okay,
let me in. I want to chat. Let's talk about teleseminars. That's a biggie. And I know you're really an expert at teleseminars.
Well, that is another way that you can take some content you've already created and add a few more discussion points to it, add a little bit more information to it, and actually create what I call your signature teleseminar. So this is what people, you know, if they go to your site, they would ask you to come and present, say, for their group, or you can actually, you know, create multiple numbers of them, you know, once a month for your own list. It's a really easy way to reach out and touch people without having to get dressed, travel, pay parking fees, you know, eat a rubber chicken lunch kind of thing. And you reach out to people in the comfort of their own home or their own offices. So I love this. I used to live in a bigger city. I used to live in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I moved back to Texas near where my mom lived, and unfortunately, I grew up out in the country, didn't she? Yes, and I moved to a small town where my husband lives, and it's just not particularly convenient to anything or to the bigger cities in Texas, you know, to Houston or Dallas, you know, being 3 hours and 7 hours respectively from both of those. So I hate to travel. I hate getting on a plane, especially with all the wanding and the undressing you have to do to get on a plane these days.
And the waiting.
And the waiting. And
hurry,
you know, I just feel exhausted every
time
I fly anywhere. And I haven't flown anywhere for about 4 years now. And then driving in Texas, you know, is in other states is not as big a deal, but, you know.
Well, yeah, permanent construction is going on.
Yeah, with construction.
You cannot drive in Texas without construction.
And I used to live in New England. I lived in Massachusetts for 11 years. You know, in a span of 3 hours, I could have visited like three different states. Well, man, in 3 hours here, as long as I go west, I haven't even really gotten into the state yet. You know, I live on the Louisiana border. I'm not even good into the state of Texas, and I've never even been, you know, to the western part of the state, to El Paso, which is, you know, as you drive into Texas from Louisiana, you see a distance sign that says, you know, El Paso, 857 miles.
800 miles.
And
it
that's
took
on
me
Interstate
3 days
10.
To cross Texas one time, and I thought I would never get out of here. I called my mother. I said, I think I'm never getting out of here. Tell everybody I love them.
Right. Never to be seen or heard from again.
Oh, I made Amarillo and just was pretty sure I was at the end of the earth. It was
right.
Awful.
So teleseminars.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, they let you reach out and touch your target market, you know, without having to leave your home and without having to deal with all the travel inconveniences. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as somebody's either got a telephone and or high-speed Internet access, if you're doing more of a webinar, you're good to go. And, you're just as professional as you are, you know, as if you were showing up in person.
Right. Probably sometimes more, actually. Do you recommend paid teleseminars or free, or does it really matter?
It really depends upon what your ultimate goal is. You know, there are one strategy that people have used, and I've used this in the past, is to do a free preview teleseminar if you're selling, say, a paid teleseminar series. So you give people a little bit of a taste of it, an experience of it, and then upsell them into, you know, buying the 4-seminar, 6-teleseminar package, what have you. Joan Stewart actually does a paid teleseminar series that she's been doing now for years where she it's either once or twice a month, invites an expert in on a very timely topic and charges a pretty nominal fee. You know, I think it's like $39 to get a CD of the recording, maybe an MP3 of the recording. And she's been doing this for years as a steady cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Last year or 2 years ago when I opened up Online BizU, I did a series of free teleseminars just to build my list. So I don't know that I have a recommendation for one over the other. It just really depends on what your goal is. And you can, you know, you can have multiple goals and offer multiple kinds of things, depending on you know, what it is you're trying to accomplish with a teleseminar. But, you know, having this goal in mind will lead you to the answer of should this be free or should this be paid.
Excellent. Well, tell people where to go one more time before we open up the line.
Sure.
Tell them where to go to get their 21-day trial to Online BizU.
It's www.onlinebizu.com/yps.htm.
Excellent. And as I said earlier, I really suggest that people go there and get that membership because it is a tremendous resource. So we're opening up the line, and this is Denise Griffiths and Donna Gunter. Do you have a question for Donna? Hello? Let's see if anybody's there. Do you have a question for Donna?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, this is Judy, the journaling genius. How are you?
Good morning, Judy.
Hi.
Okay, Judy's the one asking the questions in the chat room.
I think I need remedial Twitter because I still don't get that hash thing. So if I wanted to get hash journaling, for instance, how would I get that again?
Judy, you simply make it up.
Okay.
You know, it's not like there's a, you know, like GoDaddy or Whois, I guess, is a domain registrar where you can look up who's got what domain name. There is no central control anywhere. You just, all you need to do is just make sure that nobody else is using your particular combination of words attached to a hashtag. And if they're not, you're good to go to use that in any way that you want.
And how do I find out that they're not?
Do you log into Twitter, Donna?
Yeah,
can you walk her through the steps of getting
it?
Sorry,
okay.
I'm being really, really dumb here, but I just don't get it.
So you log into Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And go to Twitter search and just type in your hashtag name and see if any, and you know, it'll come up if anybody else has used that combination in a hashtag campaign. It will show, and it will show the tweets posted on it.
Okay.
But if it comes up that with no results found, then you can be pretty assured that nobody else is using that and you're free to use that.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. I know we have a couple of people on the line. Does anybody else have a question for Donna? I can see people with their hands up. I don't know why they're not chatting. Hello? Well, I love Blog Talk Radio, but it doesn't always work properly. So does anybody have any questions at all about social media marketing or online biz you or Twitter or anything at all? Just let us know either in the chat room or if you can hear us on the line, go ahead and chime in. I'm not
can I ask
anything.
Another one then, since you can hear me?
I reckon. I can hear you.
One of the things I get a lot from my clients is how to really monetize the use of Twitter. A lot of people don't get it, and it seems a little bit like Facebook on crack. And I understand the business, about sending content and giving people, useful things, but then how do you actually turn those into clients?
Well, people, it's part of what you're doing with your networking. If you're all, me, 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 me on any social networking site, people are going to become, they don't like that very much, and they're really going to kind of tune you out in their social networking sphere of people that they're following. One good tip is provide useful information. Two, you do have to interact with your followers, so you do have to spend, say, part of your 15 minutes a day either responding to tweets, retweeting tweets, or on Facebook, responding to posts. Again, so you can begin to create some interaction with people. As people find that you are providing them with valuable information, you're a real person, you merit their attention, then as you invite them, say, to a free teleclass, it might be an upsell for something, or give them an invitation to an event if you're having a tweet up, for example, where you're meeting face-to-face with folks, that's the point in which you can start to turn them into clients, whether you do that virtually or you do that in the real world, face-to-face kind of thing.
Got it. And actually, I have to say, I met Denise online. We met on Facebook.
On Facebook. Yeah. The odd thing is, and I'll tell this to anybody who listens, when I've owned a web development company for 10 years now, and it was rocking along pretty good. And then I joined Facebook and absolutely did nothing with it. And then all of a sudden I thought, added value services, I can add virtual assistants to my web development roster because it is added value for them. You don't want to hand a client a beautiful website, and there it sits. They need to be able to market it and automate it and do something with it. So it just made perfect sense to add virtual assistants to my skill set. And, I went on Facebook and I hung out my shingle, so to speak, and I will tell you from the heart, 99% of my original, and still clients, I still have all but one, my original VA clients came from, guess where? Facebook. 99%. 1% came from LinkedIn. So it's a wonderful place to be if you do it correctly. Donna, I have to ask you, I know what my opinion about these things are, but what is your opinion about these, people are constantly sending me invitations to mafia wars and they want to send me flowers. And I think it's all crap, but that's just me. So, what do you think of them?
I'm in the crap frame of mind, too. I don't play mafia wars. I don't play Farmville or whatever the heck it is. It's like, God, that's like too much. That's too close to real life. And I don't have time for any of that. That's just like white noise noise that of stuff that I simply don't have the time, energy, or desire to listen to. One of my personal friends, I haven't created a Facebook fan page. I'm very bad in that. I'm still using my original profile. So I've got family members and friends from high school and college and just personal acquaintances on here who have no interest in what I'm doing in my business, don't care what I'm doing in my business. And so, a couple of them have sent me a direct message like, what the heck is this? And it's like, unfortunately, you're going to have to suffer through, my business stuff because I'm really on here for business. If I weren't in business, I don't know that I'd be on Facebook, and I sure as heck wouldn't be on Twitter at all because that's just not who I am as a person. I just don't go share this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
But I'm here to build a business, so I apologize that you've got to suffer through this. And one point I'll create a fan page for my business and switch everybody over, but that day has not yet arrived, so I have not yet done that.
Yeah, I finally had to do that. But I look at some people's pages, and they're kind of hanging their shingle out. I'm going to be a VA or, I'm going to be a coach. And I look at their page, and I think, I cannot possibly take you seriously. I mean, you've got nothing but clutter on there. It's not professional. It's just junk. It's garbage. And it's just taking up an awful lot of what I call real estate. So my opinion about Facebook, if you're there for professional reasons, keep it professional. I mean, sure, you want to make the occasional, you know, quasi-personal remark, you know, just so people get a sense of who you are. But nobody wants to know that you're dancing naked in the rain. Seriously, nobody wants to know.
Right. And if all your posts are, you know, oh, I had vanilla ice cream today, or I'm waiting in line at Starbucks, and you've got, say, 15 of those posts and one business post, you know, it's like, I don't have time to pay attention to you. You're not providing me with any useful information, especially if your purpose of being on these social networking sites is to build your business.
And, you know, I just, after a while, I block those people. And another thing that to me is an absolute no-no, and you see this on personal pages more than anything, is the amount of cursing. It, really foul language. It's like, oh, done. You know, I'll block them. I won't even let them come near my page, because if they're putting that on their page, goodness only knows what they're going to put on my page. And I can't monitor all remarks. I have to assume, or, you know, be comfortable in assuming that most of the people who are visiting my Facebook fan page are there for business.
Right.
So, you know, I keep it pretty much strictly business. But I'm glad to know I'm not alone with those things, because I just detest them. So,
yeah, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, there's a place for those, I think, but not on a business page. So we are out of time, and thank you, Donna, so much for being with me here today. You've given our listeners, our audience, some really valuable information. The Twitter hashtags went over really big, and I appreciate that very, very much. And again, for those of you who are listening and those of you who will be listening in the future, go to Donna's website. It's OnlineBizU. It's https://www.onlinebizu.com/yps.htm. She offers a free, I think it's a dollar, 21-day trial membership. I strongly recommend it. So thank you, everybody, for being here today. The show will be available for download in about an hour. It usually is. And this is Denise Griffith and Donna Gunter, and we are wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I'll see you next week. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.